The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation. Let me tell you something, G, don't be out here talking about a click. Only click you need to know about is the Harley and Sickle Sherry. See, because what you're dealing with here is the brotherhood. It's nonstop from this point on. And WCW, we take what we want. And after we take Lex Luger and the Giant, we want the gold, sucker. Hulk Hogan, we coming for you, nigga. Hello, patrons, and welcome to The Dark Match. This week, I'm joined by my very special guest, Miss Simi, also known as DancingElf88 on Twitter. How are you, Miss Simi?
I'm doing very good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad you could join me this week to review AEW Dynamite coming to us from Huntsville, Alabama. A.K.A. Rocket City. So we start off the action fast and furious as John Moxley takes on Ortiz. Ortiz heads up top and a big splash gets a two count. The fisherman suplex also gets a two. Ortiz grounds things. He heads up top and he flies into a big boot. The Rainmaker by Moxley, and then he runs Ortiz into Santana. We get the Death Rider, or the Paradigm Shift, from Moxley, and John Moxley is your winner. Before we talk about the post-match, Miss Simi, AEW usually starts out really hot, and this week was no different, starting off with John Moxley coming through the crowd. Facing Ortiz. Ortiz is really fun in the ring. He's a good heel. Plus, he's got really good moves as far as he can dive and stuff and still heal it up. So, what'd you feel about this combination in ring between John Moxley and Ortiz?
I really like this match. And it was, like, surprising that Ortiz hadn't wrestled in, like a singles match in, like, 4 years because he did really good. He's hilarious to me. Like, when he just, like, planks on people. He does, like, that tiger style, like, when he hisses. I think he's so fun. And, like, I actually like John Moxley now. Like, when he was, like, Dean Ambrose, I got so bored so quickly. But, like, here, he feels, like, fresh and different. And this match was, like, dope and really good. I like how, like, high energy it was and how it wasn't just, like, a squash match. I really like this match a lot.
After the match, Santana attacks, but he gets laid out by a Death Rider. Moxley teases Jericho with the car keys to the car that Jericho gifted him. Then he takes the keys out. He says an eye for an eye. And he stabs Santana in the eye with the car keys.
So, he went biblical.
Yeah. Straight vigilante style. So, Moxley, of course, sprints out of the ring as the inner circle runs down to check on Santana. This was pretty graphic, just as graphic as when John Moxley got his eye damaged.
Woo! It was a lot.
Yes, it was a lot. And considering what was coming later on in this show, this was just like an appetizer, right?
This whole show was just like, do you want gore? Here you go. Have fun. It's like, all right. That's a lot.
Yeah, here's our theme for tonight.
Right
off the top. So the great feud continues, the build for John Moxley and Jericho. It's great how they've got all the little underbosses in front of Jericho, and Moxley's kind of got to go through them one by one.
That's what I really like.
Just a great way to tell a story and something you can do when you have such a large gap in between your pay-per-view events.
Yeah. It's good because it also keeps you, like, anticipating the match because they're not, like, going at each other one-on-one. It's usually, like, Jericho just, like, flaming people on commentary and, like, having his people, like, do his bidding, which I really like. It keeps it fresh so it's not, like, the same thing over and over again.
Right. Next up, the SCUs, they faced off against the Best Friends. It breaks down as the Soul Food and half combo connects. The Best Friends hug, but Scorpio Sky, he stops the Strong Zero, and that allows Cass to hit the Code Red, and SCU, they get the win.
My favorite part of this match was when they were all laid out and then Orange Cassidy just came and just like took a nap with everybody else. That was my favorite thing.
Orange Cassidy.
I love him.
What do you love about him? Let me put this preface out there.
All right.
If I don't know what Orange Cassidy is, you want to explain it to somebody who watches wrestling but doesn't necessarily know about him, how would you explain it to him?
Orange Cassidy is weird and... Ooh, I don't know how to explain it. You just got to watch it. It's just funny. It's like he's comic relief without it being like too corny or dumb. It's just like, it's just enough comedy where you're just like, aha, that's a breath of fresh air. But it's not like hit you over the head constantly, like all the time.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess that's what I like. It's just like, wrestling doesn't have to be so like intense serious all the time. You could just have like some like dumb funny stuff just like interjected every now and then.
After the match, the Dark Order is here. They attack, they lay out SCU and the Best Friends until Orange Cassidy hits the ring. They offer Orange Cassidy a Dark Order mask. Orange Cassidy refuses by putting his hands up and then putting them in his pockets. And then Stu Grayson went upside his head. So Christopher Daniels comes down. He makes the save. The Dark Order refuses to attack Christopher Daniels and they leave.
It would have been funny if Orange Cassidy was like the exalted one. That would have been a twist. I like what they're doing with this Christopher Daniels thing, how they like built off that botch to like kind of weave it into like this Dark Order thing because SCU is so over. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like trying to like get the Dark Order more over. Although I think they did it with all those like promos and stuff. But I think this is like kind of a good way to really weave them into the main show.
I think the Dark Order has what I call Bray Wyatt syndrome.
Yeah.
Everything they do that's pre-produced is awesome. Mm-hmm. But most of the things that they do in front of the live crowd aren't as good. This is actually was an exception, though, because I laughed so loud and so hard. Everybody's like, boo, when they attacked Orange Cassidy. I was dying laughing.
Yeah. That's how I feel about, like, the Butcher and the Blade. I guess we'll get to that when we get to that match. Mm-hmm. It's because like it's like all like the pre-promo stuff or like the stuff people are saying is like good, but then when it comes to like the actual like action in the ring, there's something like just that doesn't curl all the way over.
MJF, he cuts a promo on Cody referencing the walk behind her line from a Dusty Rhodes famous promo. He says he's going to whip Cody into submission and that he will never be a walk behind her again. MJF's whole plan for this night is that Cody won't be able to take the 10 lashes. And therefore, if he doesn't complete the 10 lashes, then he doesn't get the match.
Yeah.
Haven't we seen this apple change colors here really quick? Dr. Britt Baker, baby, took on Yuka Sakazaki, returning for the first time since Double or Nothing. So it was good to see her back in AEW. Sakazaki counters Britt Baker's attempt for the lockjaw, cradles her up, and Yuka Sakazaki upsets Britt Baker. Ooh. Yeah, I think everybody was like, huh? Because, you know, they were kind of, it's like a 3-minute match. So, you know, Britt's being aggressive and Yuki's kind of fighting her off and they're kind of just getting kind of going. And then all of a sudden, it's over.
Yeah. I like Yuka.
I like her a lot too.
Like a little genie anime girl.
Right. I think she has a really good look and a really fun wrestling style in the ring. I think that, I mean, we'll talk about it here at the very, I think we'll save it for, that's a big part, I think, of what we're going to talk about at the end with you. So we'll move on to the post-match. Britt Baker lays out Yuka with the ring bell. Then she makes her bite the bottom rope before kicking her in kind of like a curb stomp, but not quite, because she kind of kicked her in like the back or like in the neck area. But anyway, it made Yuka bite down on the rope and it knocked out a tooth.
I didn't like this.
It
Ew. They focused so much on that damn tooth, and I was like, get the camera away from there.
And then, if that wasn't enough, once you could realize this, oh man, I got a bloody mouth and I'm missing a tooth, Britt Baker applies the lockjaw to the bloody Yuka
Unsanitary.
Sakazaki.
Ooh, even Aubrey Evers had gloves now. Like, ew, you just put your hand, your dirty hand, in her bloody mouth. Too much. This theme of gore just continues.
Right. So the Britt Baker heel turn is in full effect. She was coming out making fun of the fans and her teeth. So yeah, full little shop of horrors from Britt Baker. I like it.
Me too. She works better as a heel to me.
Yeah, it seems more natural to her, and she seems to be finding her voice with the promo as well.
Yeah, because that first one on that boat, I was like, what is this? It was bad. But like afterwards, I think she got more comfortable with it. So I like her better as a heel. It works.
I'm pretty sure Adam Cole was like, look here, come
Yeah. He was like, let me put you on game. Come here.
The Elite, in the form of Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, and the Young Bucks, took on the Lucha Brothers and the Butcher and the Blade. Hangman Page is favoring his knee. He refuses to tag out to the Young Bucks, but all night he would tag out and work with Kenny Omega. So, a little bit more layers to the story there. And Pentagon Jr. cuts him off. The double stomp package pile driver combo connects, and Hangman Page gets pinned, and the Butcher and the Blade and the Lucha Brothers get the win.
Woo. That hubris got to Adam Page.
Well, he had that Marshawn Lynch, I'm only here so I don't get fired look when the match started, when he was first standing on the side. Then when the Young Bucks were in there, he wasn't even like standing up there to get tagged.
No,
Then
he was
we
grumpy.
right,
Whole match.
then when Kenny got in, he got back up there, so he was working with Kenny back and forth. But then once the young then like you said, once he got in and the Young Bucks wanted to tag, he was like, nah, I got it.
He was like, nah. This is my favorite storyline so far.
Right.
Like, whole thing. I like really like what they're doing. I like when like Adam Page, like when he walked out, he was like, I'm not doing this fucking pose. I'm gone. He just walked
Right.
down to the ring. That made me so happy. I was like, you curmudgeon-y little something. It made me so happy.
Two years ago, Adam Page was on the verge of maybe being. You watch New Japan at all?
Not really.
Okay.
I don't really know where to watch it or like when it comes on.
Okay, don't worry about it. I got you. I got you. But he was like becoming the next big American star, right? So all the guys were beginning to like he had a match with Okada in 2018 at the begin like the very beginning of 2018. That was just amazing. And everybody was like, yo, Hangman Page is coming along. And then, he made the move in the middle of the year to go with AEW. So he wasn't wrestling for like almost a whole year, at least like 8 months, he didn't wrestle.
Wow.
So it took him a while, and then, they had him challenge for the title, and then he lost it against Jericho, and then he had this downward spiral or whatever. But it's awesome how they took that and then they spun it into what they've done now with this story, with the Young Bucks and Kenny and the tag team titles and all the stuff that they've got mixed into it over time, and it's made him such a big hit. I mean, he was already over, but now the people care about him. At first, it was just like, yo, cowboy shit, Hangman Page, he's a good wrestler. He has good matches. He's not winning, and we don't know why, but we still come out and cheer him. Now they really got a reason to cheer him.
And I don't know if you watched the Being the Elite thing, the YouTube that they have.
No, I don't really keep up with that as much as I probably should.
But they have like kind of like storylines and stuff on there, and he's actually really funny on there too.
Right.
So like charming.
Tony Schiavone arrives and he wants to interview Kenny Omega in the ring. But then we have a video from in the back, and Pac is here being his normal bastard self. He says he wants his rematch. And since Kenny Omega doesn't care about Michael Nakazawa, since he left him for dead, I guess he'll just have to go after Riho. So Kenny, in a panic, agrees to the match. As Pac says, he may be a bastard, but he's not a beast. But she is. And this leads to Nyla Rose attacking and powerbombing Riho. I would say through a table, but it didn't break, so the correct terminology would be on a table.
Yeah, she just bounced.
Yeah.
She's too light to break a table.
Right. Even when you gimmick the table, there still needs to be enough weight to make it work. So,
She's like
yeah.
3 pounds.
That looked like that hurt a lot.
Oh, jeez. But she deserved that. She should have ran. Why were you just standing there?
Oh, she was
She
in shock.
Listen, no. No. There's instincts gotta kick in. She'd be the first one to die in a scary movie. She deserved it. I was like, what is this? All this time you just sit there watching this man talk, and then you just stood there. Why didn't you run? You can get away. You're light enough. You can slip through his hands. You're skinny. And she deserved it. And I like Riho, but I was like, this is dumb. Why didn't you run?
Everybody's enigmatic fave, Darby Allin, has a video package. He tries to talk, but remember, he can't because last week the
What?
inner circle crushed his larynx with the skateboard. So he uses a form of visual communication as he takes a flamethrower to a cardboard stand-up of Sammy Guevara and Chris Jericho.
Yeah, Darby Allin is my guy.
Darby Allin is a lot of people's guy.
Love him.
Darby Allin and Luchasaurus.
Yes. But every time he does that damn coffin drop, like my heart stops just a little bit because he's so reckless. But I love him.
And the freedom that they give him to do his own videos. Because remember the match where I think it was where he wrestled Jericho? Or yeah, where he did he got in the body bag and they did the crowd surfing with him and he came out on the stage in the body bag.
We're all those random people. I was like, who's that?
Yeah. So he's got some pretty cool creativity that adds to his character as well. Kip Sabian versus Joey Janela. So we watch AEW every week, so I can say this, and I know you won't get offended. These two guys took up their normal spot where the ladies match kind of makes the show go swoop just a little bit on the curve. This was that match this week. These two, they trade strikes until Sabian cuts Janela off with a DDT. Penelope Ford distracts the ref and kisses Sabian. That allows Ford to get bumped onto the floor, and then Sabian cradles Joey Janela with the tights to get the win.
Yeah, this match was like meh for me. Because, like, I think Kip Sabian's good and I like Joey Janela, but this, like, thing is not working. It's, like, not as good as, like, Matt Hardy, Edge, and Lita. It just doesn't compare. It doesn't have the
Right.
oomph.
Doesn't have the like real life stuff that goes into it too that makes it so much more real.
Yeah,
it does, but it doesn't.
Yeah, it's like, if you're gonna give me soap opera triangle, you need to give me soap opera triangle. This was not it.
We go to the back. Chris Jericho's got the microphone. He's ranting. He says, "What kind of man would dare take out another man's eye, jeopardizing his livelihood and ability to take care of his family?" Santana says, he grabs the mic. He says he's had a bad month, but Moxley just unleashed something new in him. And next week, he's coming for Moxley, and it's going to be an eye for an eye.
Woo, this was good.
Yeah, it was a really good promo, man. Santana went off.
Yeah. His, like, intensity with, like, Jericho's hypocrisy was, like, it was great. Right. Loved it.
Right. I'll say this for Jon Moxley. I love his dedication.
Yeah.
He was in Japan over the past weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And in Japan, eye patch.
Yes. We stand commitment.
Yes, I'm going to make sure that you are able to watch this Sunday, because he's going up against one of the most sadistic veterans of New Japan Wrestling, Minoru Suzuki.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the United States champion in New Japan. And so this is going to be just a brawl. It's not going to be much of a wrestling match. No, this is going to take place all through the arena and shit. It's going to be amazing.
Nice. I love brawls.
The Young Bucks are backstage. They're arguing with Adam Page about losing that tag match. So Matt's like, "Man, we might think you have a drinking problem." So they took away his beer, his cup of beer, kind of give him a reality check. But out of nowhere, Adam Page produces a pitcher of beer.
This was the best. I love this. I love good physical comedy. That was hilarious.
And JR is like, "Well, you know, they say it's cheaper by the pitcher anyway." But yeah, Adam Page continuing to do his cowboy shit. Stealing the show here in his little comedic timing. Now we get to our main event segment of the night. Can you believe that in 2020, in Huntsville, Alabama, of all places, that we witnessed a white man get whipped on national TV by a whole bunch of other white dudes?
I was like, they're not going to let this white man get whipped. They did. They had him get whipped on TV by this other white man. I was like, this is wild. Great segment, though. I was like, damn, this is what we're doing. Okay.
So MJF and Wardlow, they're here. Like we said, Cody has to survive all 10 lashes or he doesn't get that match with MJF. Cody arrives like he always does, three-piece Cody. He's got the trench coat on. He's styling and profiling like he always is. So he takes off the trench coat, takes off his shirt, and it's time to get to business. MJF says his belt is too nice to use for this occasion. Rude. So he wants to use Cody's belt instead.
Patty.
Cody gives him the belt, and it's on. So MJF teases Cody for a little while. Then the whipping starts. So MJF hits him with the first one. He removes his jacket so he can get a little bit more range and, you know, swing back on the next draw. And that's when the Butcher, the Blade, and the Bunny with a bunch of other heels from the back come out to watch. MJF hits the second lash and Cody gets fired up, gets in his face, and he just dares Cody to hit him because, you know, he can't touch him.
Yeah.
MJF hits the third lash. And now it's starting to be visible. Cody's starting to whelp up. So Arn Anderson comes down. And he's like, "Don't let it get to you, man. Don't let them show you just getting to you. Be tough. Be tough. You can do it." So MJF mocks Arn. And it's like, "Nah, you can't help him. You can't save him." So he hits the fourth lash. And Cody goes down. MJF tells Cody to quit. He refuses and he wants more. So the fifth lash follows. Cody drops down again. That's when Dustin Rhodes comes out. He says, hey, MJF, that's enough. I'll take the last five. MJF is like, nah, homie, get the out of here. So I'll stop right here. We're five lashes in. How are you feeling?
That I was like, okay. I mean, I was like, it's a belt. It's fine, I guess. But like when Dustin came down and was like, I'll take, I was just like, oh, brothers. That got to my heart. I was like, oh, family love. So that got me. So I was like, yeah.
Dustin.
So where it was like, all right.
Starting to get to you a little bit, huh?
Yeah.
All right. So Dustin, you know, tells Cody, you got this. You can make it. So MJF does a quick successions, number six and number seven. And then the Young Bucks come down. MJF says no one can help Cody and just tells Cody he needs to quit. It can all be over. All he's got to do is quit. They show a close-up of Cody. He starts to have tears in his eyes. MJF delivers lash number eight, tells Cody to stay down. MJF fires up, and he gets ready to deliver number nine. And that's when Wardlow takes the strap. Wardlow delivers the ninth lash, and that drops Cody back down to the mat again.
And that made a big sound. I was like, ooh, that one looked like it hurt. Because he put like all his big ass weight into it.
MJF is talking shit. And that brings Brandy out. And this is the real Brandy. Yeah, like, you know, she's in all white compared to being in all black. So she comes out and she rallies Cody. Tell him that he can do it. He's almost there. She loves him. And Cody takes the 10th lash, and everybody that was at ringside, they all rush in and take, check on him. MJF is pissed because he just knew Cody wasn't going to be able to take it. He was going to give up. He's such a pretty boy that he wasn't going to be able to make it. So in his disgust, MJF low blows Cody, and then he runs out of the ring, and they run up through the crowd. And did you see the fan try to attack him?
No.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so they're up there. So they're up there, and Wardlow and MJF are standing there, and they're just kind of looking down at Cody and them. And then back there behind them, you can see the security guy that they have for AEW. It's a dude that looks like Bill Goldberg, actually. Bald head, white guy with a kind of gray salt and pepper goatee, right? And you can see him. He's kind of in the shot, but just barely, you know, and he kind of moves out. And then all of a sudden they show the ring, and then when they come back to MJF, it looks like a fan kind of like ran up the stairs, and like Wardlow and MJF kind of have him kind of on his hands and knees, and then all of a sudden they like drag him up to where that security guard guy is, and then it goes off. Boom.
Oh, shit. I did not see that.
Yeah.
Damn, he got major heat.
Yeah. It was heavy duty.
Yeah.
It was in the South where it would draw that type of emotion out of people. And
we know it's not real.
And it made you feel bad for Cody, which is tough to do for a babyface in today's wrestling climate. You know what I'm saying? Because everybody likes the cool heel. Nobody really likes the babyface.
Except he's like one of like the only babyfaces that people really go up for.
Right.
I don't know, like he's really good at like garnering that like emotion out of people.
Because, and we can drift into what I want to talk about, which is the state of AEW. It's been about 5 months now since the show has been on the air. It debuted in October. We're now in February. So in March, it'll be the 6 month kind of point. Cody has turned himself into a cross between Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, he's really, like, good. Like, he's really good at, like, giving that emotion, but also kind of being, like, a kind of a badass where you know he can keep up with people. But, like, he can still, like, garner emotions from you. He's really good at doing that, like, a crafting a story.
Right, right. I think, and this is why I wanted you on the show, because, like I told you before we started recording, you've been there for every show at 8 o'clock, just like I do. I tune into this one live, and then I record NXT, and I'll watch it later, and you do the same thing, because you're always there on NXT with me as well. So, I think that the people that we knew coming in from WWE, Cody, Jericho, Moxley, Dustin, have kind of set themselves in a different tier than everybody else. Then you have Hangman, Kenny, Young Bucks. You have that kind of group of guys, right? The kind of New Japan indie guys, right? Then under that, you have like the whole everybody else, all the women, all the indie guys, all the people who are on Dark, all the people who they sign, you know, just kind of here and there that they've plucked here and there since they've been started. And I think what they've done a really poor job of is that third and fourth rung of people, they didn't spend enough time introducing the mass audience to those people. And in general, not even to the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega. They could have enlightened them a little bit more too. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on how the rollout has been and where do you feel they've come up short as far as, I think a lot of people say they, like, I have a buddy who I work with who's like, I really want to get into AEW, but I don't really know anybody. And I feel like they didn't do a great job of building the underneath people as far as, hey, this is this guy, this is this guy, this is what he's about, so forth.
I think the, like, the best person out of, like, kind of, like, the other group that they've done a good job of doing, the only one is, like, I feel like Darby Allin. Is kind of like the only one, but I think that's more because of like Darby himself and like his wrestling style. But like a lot of like the other people, I'm just like, I don't know who that is. I don't really know who they are. And I think like the biggest, like the most glaring part is the women's division that like gets on my nerves so badly. Cause you see how like easy it is for them to kind of like craft a story from like a little bit, like that Christopher Daniels like botch thing, they were able to just like kind of make it into a thing. But with like the women's division, it's like there's no real plan or no real direction, and they're not given like enough time for us to really get to know them, and it like makes me angry. And where the hell is Sunny Kiss?
I think for the women's division that they should have, I guess because they didn't want to have two heel champions, but the whole thing would have worked better if they put the belt on Nyla Rose.
Yeah.
The obvious, biggest, baddest person in the division. Start with them.
Yeah.
And then naturally figure out which woman catches on with the crowd and then let them become your number one first babyface champion.
Right, Chris Statlander, right there.
It could have been, and what's the other, Sheeta.
Sheeta,
I so like good. Sheeta. Those two, to me, are much more interesting and more effective and much more, get more response from the crowd than Rio does.
Yeah, freaking Swole, Big Swole.
Yes.
It's over. It's like, I like Rio. She's good, but like it's like if she's wrestling, I think, but in Stardom or something,
right?
Like, you know that she can't really be there like all the time. Put it on Nyla because that was the money shot, especially since like Nyla isn't like literally all of your posters. Like I went to Comic-Con, Nyla was like on the panel. It's like if she's gonna be like kind of one of your star women besides like Brandy and like Awesome Kong, like put the belt on her and let her run with it because she has great matches with everybody.
Right.
And she's there. It's not like, you know, Brock Lesnar syndrome, which is kind of what Rio's giving me right now.
One good thing that they have done is that they recognize quickly that the Britt Baker thing just wasn't working for whatever reason. She wasn't taking off with the crowd. Like, they had that one night in Pittsburgh where it felt like, okay, it might be happening. But then when Chris Statlander popped up and, you know, she started having really good matches, people were like, oh yeah. So they moved on from her trying to be that number one baby face in the women's division to kind of now it's still kind of up in the air. I think they're still searching. Yeah. And maybe if they have this title change with the match that'll be coming up in a couple of weeks between Nyla Rose and Riho, or maybe next week, maybe it'll be easier for them to find that baby face that the crowd is really going to be into.
Because I think they have it. Like, all the women are, like, really talented. Not, like, none of them can wrestle. But it's, like, if you're not going to give them as much time to, like, craft a story as you do for, like, the Young Bucks or, like, for Cody or for anything, it's, like, put somebody there who knows, like, what they're doing, who's dedicated to it, who has the time, and then you could just take off.
How do you feel about, are you a big watcher of Dark?
Yeah, I do watch Dark, yeah.
How do you feel about them not incorporating more of kind of those video segments that they have in Dark? Like the, what is it, Undesirable to Undefeated or whatever that little series that Cody does, where they could maybe use that as some more character development. How do you feel about them kind of using Dark as that tool instead of putting it on Dynamite?
I mean, on the one hand, it's smart because a lot of people are just online anyway, but not everybody is. I think it would be better to put it on the actual TV so that people can, like, see what's going on. Because a lot of times they kind of depend on people watching Dark or, like the being the elite, because that's where they, like, weave the storylines in. And it's like, well, not everybody knows what that is. So if you put it on, like, the actual television so we can see it, it'll, like, make it easier for people to get to know, like, the wrestlers and their story and stuff like that.
Right. So, like, I know a big thing that's been, like, I haven't been watching Dark for the past couple of weeks, and I know that I've heard a big thing that's been going on are the Brandy segments, where she's been kind of, like, going to a therapist, but it's herself. She's talking to herself. And it's, I guess, I don't know if they're going to drop it because they had, like, they kicked Awesome Kong out of the group already and everything. So I don't know, but it's such a companion piece.
Yeah.
To go with the show, but I don't really know how much they're able to draw people to that and how they could maybe integrate a little bit more of that too, because their production is off the chart.
Yeah. It's just like who they use it on is sometimes like, why?
Right. But they don't really, I can say this for their actual Dynamite show. They don't have a lot of BS filler. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They don't waste a lot of time on crap.
Yeah.
So,
although I do think they could benefit from like a couple more backstage segments, like maybe like one or two more.
It seems like they're trying to do that. Like this week they had two backstage interviews. They had the thing with Pac and Riho that took place kind of, you know, behind the stage. So it seems like they're trying to involve a little bit more of that type of stuff into their show, but not make it so WWE, I guess. Yeah,
which I like that, that they're trying to kind of differentiate themselves. And I like that since they've been on television more, they've kind of backed off of like the pot shots at WWE. Like WWE, it's like sometimes it, like in the beginning, it was just like, all right, we get it. All right, we get it. Now it's kind of like they're kind of trying to do more of their own thing, and it's not so much like taking shots at WWE.
All right. So just overall, before we wrap up this edition of the Dark Match, just in the first 5 months, give me some things that you would like to see them improve upon going forward in the second half of this run until they make their first year of being on television?
Put Sonny Kiss in an actual match that's not twerking for 2 seconds for Billy Gunn before he gets thrown over the rope. Like, I'd like to see, like, more variety of people who are actually wrestling. Like, not just, like, oh, it's the Bucks, it's Kenny, it's, like, these people. I want to see, like, other people kind of get a little bit more shine with that, and, like, a couple more backstage segments. And if they could fix their damn audio issues, that would be so clutch. Like, thank you.
All right, so... thank you to Miss Simi for helping me break down the state of AEW. Hopefully we touched on some things that people have been thinking about, or have been some talking points that they wanted to bring up. And if something we didn't touch on, feel free to tweet us at the WrestleCast and use the hashtag DynamiteCast, and we'll definitely address your concerns on Twitter. So once again, thank you for listening to this edition of The Dark Match.